thank you for to all our listeners for all your support for It's Not Just In Your Head. We have an unfortunate announcement to make, which is our beloved editor, producer, co-host Liam Tate is unfortunately having to leave the podcast due to work commitments, and we are extremely sad to see him go because he was an integral and fundamentally one of the most important parts of presenting, being able to present this podcast to our listeners. So we do have an announcement to make, which is if anybody is interested in filling the incredible shoes that Liam has served for our podcast, we are looking for a potential editor, producer. If you don't want to be a co-host, that is absolutely fine. So please reach out to us at itsnotjustinyourhead@gmail.com with interest or referrals or suggestions. And due to this departure, our podcast will be on a hiatus. We can't give you a timeline just yet for obvious reasons of searching for the next producer editor. I would love to say a hearty and great thank you to Liam. You have been one of the most pleasurable experience of any kind of group project I've ever had. And thank you very much for your time, your sense of humor, your comments, your intellect. It's been an absolute joy working with you.
Yes, indeed. And we welcome any others who would. They couldn't fill exactly Liam's shoes, but shoes that are interesting and would be a producer and editor. We welcome you. And, you know, just as every therapy has an end, and often the person has moved on and accomplished what they needed. In this case, Liam hasn't accomplished what we needed, an awareness of the political, economic, and social ramifications of personal problems for people. We put a dent in it, and we certainly tried, and we hope that work can continue.
Yeah, nice. I wish I could say all those nice things back to you guys. It's just been fucking awful. Jokes.
Fuck you guys. I'm done with the story. You know, the way
out. Mic drop. Yeah, no, I did want to ask you both questions around the idea of when therapy stuff comes to an end, because maybe it has parallels with ending the podcast. I don't know, but it's a good enough segue to talk about something mental health related.
Yes, I think so. I've been giving it thought since you said you were interested in that. And often, if a client has accomplished what he, she, they set out for, then they're done. You have to move on in your life because of economic exigencies. You have to survive and thrive. And so we give you our blessing, just like if a client, if we want a client to stay for other reasons, but they need to do something else, we have to graciously let them go. And there's a time when, as every therapist knows that the people are feeling better, are doing better, don't like to leave because it's hard to leave anything. But at least I wait until they suggest it, because since it costs money, that's a good reason to stop if they want to. How do you terminate, Ikoi?
Working for a facility that was a residential facility, it comes with a termination point. It's not the client, and having clients always have the option to terminate early, but there's always going to be a terminal point in residential rehab. So it was never a situation of the kind of relationships that sometimes happen in therapy where you have years of interaction and where termination is a lot more self-directed rather than program-based. But ultimately, at the end of the day, we want people to do better. And that is why people enter this field. And graduation to a certain degree is a joyful thing, or somebody saying that they are doing better and they are no longer in need of your services is ultimately what we want for clients. We want our clients to not need us.
Although what I remember in one particular case, I had a gentleman, all he wanted was not to want to die every day. And he accomplished that. Now, there were plenty of other things I think he could have done to make his life better, but that's all he needed. He needed to not want to die every day. And you have to respect where people are coming from and what they need. And for some of your clients, I'm sure, Ikoi, you would want more than just that they're no longer on the substance. You would want them to have full, rich lives.
Oh, of course. Of course. That's one of the downfalls, I think, of such a narrow metric for success, generally speaking, and in mental health in general, is that we have this extremely narrow metric for what constitutes success a lot of times, rather than people having rich, fulfilling lives. But people having rich, fulfilling lives oftentimes require a society that is conducive to people having rich, conductive lives. And therapy can't necessarily make rich, conductive lives for people. No. We can only help people manage and cope and build better relationships with others in the course of what we do. But ultimately, I think what we do as providers, therapy, counseling, is about making people, giving people skills, giving people the ability to move forward in life and not necessarily need to talk to us.
Right. It's true. And I think that one of the things that keeps people hopeful and mentally healthy is realizing they're not alone, connecting with other people. And if they're at all inclined, connecting around a hopeful thing to accomplish, whether it's racial justice or the end of wars or economic justice or sexual justice, to be connected with a group that has a hope and a mission is enormously healing, although it's not for everybody. I found that's enormously healing for people. And I think where America is in such awful shape is that there really isn't a dominant hope and promise on a large scale. There are movements that are burgeoning. My goodness, the labor movement has done an amazing job. Hundreds of thousands of people are unionized, and even at places where they wouldn't have thought of it, like the Cornell University faculty or the Chicago Museum of Art are unionized. And that's definitely a positive, but an overarching hope, like they have in France with alternative parties like Mélenchon, France Insoumise, France Unbowed, that is trying to unite and doing a pretty good job. The progressive labor movement, the Black and Algerian Lives Matter, the anti-racist movements, the anti-sexist movements, those are all huge if they're united. And I think that's why Macron called for a ceasefire in Israel, and he even tried to join BRICS and get out of NATO because of the pressure of people uniting for a better France. And I think I've been to France, not that recently, but last year, and you didn't see people raging on the street the way you do in New York. And you also didn't see the mass murder rate that we have. But then again, no issue.
Very different country, very different policies. It's hard to compare one. America, to a certain degree, is a relatively unique country in that we have oftentimes very different policies from a lot of our G7 peers.
That's true.
Yeah. So
France has a culture of resistance. They have a culture that if something's wrong, you don't go home and beat your wife or get a gun And there are more guns than people.
Domestic violence is an issue everywhere. So I don't think you can make that claim necessarily regarding any.
You have a huge safety valve. If people are upset and they look at the social causes of it and they get active. When I was in France at one time, the government wanted to curtail the free public childcare centers they have. And hundreds of thousands were in the streets within a week. That we don't have a sort of culture of seeing that the problems we have personally may relate to the social and economic influences in our lives.
Yeah. Also, like having war on your home turf and rebuilding your country is a relatively recent memory in most of Europe, I think, does bring a much more collective tendency. That's one of the major differences of the World War II experience, is that Europe was in rubbles and America never had to rebuild. Right. People never had to cooperate and rebuild in this country, that we were able to move forward with the hyper-individualism, because that is a huge part of our alienation. And there are definite, for example, South Korea and Japan, while not necessarily a hyper-individualist society, is also an extreme high-pressure society with actually higher suicide rates than the United States. So every society is different. Every society has certain aspects of their weaknesses. But ultimately, as people, it is always a good thing to strive for something better. And whether that is political, whether that is national, whether that is local, whether that is even like really small things like volunteering in your local public garden, whatever it is too. That makes the world a better place. I think that is ultimately the point of doing podcasts like this. I think that is the spirit of what brought, I'm not one of the original co-hosts, so that brought the second generation of It's Not Just In Your Head. And hopefully we will have a third, but again, extremely grateful for everyone here, whether we continue or whether we are able to continue or whether we end up closing this podcast. I just want to say that it was a pleasure working with everyone, and absolutely it was a pleasure being able to talk about important issues with like-minded, but not necessarily always in agreement, people, because that's one of the most important things, is that a lot of like-minded people, there is still diversity in thought, there is still diversity in approach and opinions, and being able to talk about that, those differences are just, or sometimes more important than being able to, the common ground is common ground, we both know what it is.
Yeah.
Also, I think that those nations that have a socialist presence at least have a dream of sharing and justice, economic and social justice, which America at this point doesn't have very much. I don't think England does either. And that gives people some hope. And
stability in America is considered like an individual pursuit rather than a societal pursuit, right? So that's one of the major differences of, I think, again, not having to rebuild a country. Talk to a lot of people, whether it's from older people from Europe, older people, or even younger people, because the Middle East has been racked by wars. And ultimately, in order for the common people to survive a war, whether that is with bombs or economic policy, the survival is working together.
That's true. Also, the United States has a phenomenon that has been very destructive to our political solidarity, and that is that after FDR died and after World War II ended, the McCarthy hearings began because they were scared. They advertised our ally, Uncle Joe. Joseph Stalin was our biggest ally during World War II, and 30 million Russians were killed in World War II. And so there was enormous solidarity between the two countries to beat the Nazis. And
I
also,
guess kind of, there is a lot of discussions.
Yeah, but I want to finish this thought
because of course,
it's a uniquely American thing. And then at the same time, FDR, in order to start things like unemployment insurance during the Great Depression, had to go to his rich compatriots and say, you better let us tax you at 96.8%, or the people who are mobilized, because socialists and communists were mobilized all over the United States, or they'll take the factories. For example, FDR started the National Agricultural Recovery Act because the Iowa militias were hanging bankers who condemned family farms. There was armed conflict, and the left was really mobilized. And the way they demobilized the left in the United States was to decide that anyone who was a communist was a traitor, and anyone who was a socialist or a leftist was a fellow traveler. And so thousands of people were jailed and deported, and that whole tradition of anti-communism couldn't be perpetrated in Europe because the resistance was organized by the Communist Party primarily. So they couldn't do that. And in Germany, although with the money they gave in the Marshall Plan, they arranged to have no communists teaching at the universities, the communists then who were educated went into the unions. So they have some of the most powerful unions that exist that are left unions. And so that left presence was not part of the United States. And it had always been a counterbalance to the capitalist tendencies of the United States. And we don't have one. We're just building it again through the union movement. So that's another reason why this program is really badly needed, because the psych establishment tends not to see the social and economic causes of people's misery. And yeah, we have been championing that idea.
Everything is highly compartmentalized in the mental health sector.
And it's for profit, because the hospitals, the doctors, and the insurance companies and big pharma unite to keep it that way. And it's very scary. It's a health industrial complex, if you want to call it that. Because there haven't been socialist and communist antidotes here.
Or humanist. We are treated like working machines and not human beings.
Because capitalism, the idea is to make money, not to be nice to people.
You aren't even allowed to have a life, right?
Right. If they have anything,
that you are just an extractive entity for other people.
That's right. Someone to exploit. And that is terrible for people's mental health.
Yeah, I think, thank you to Max and Harriet for initially starting all of this. And then it's awesome that Max reached out to you, Ikwe, and that you
joined.
I've really enjoyed all the episodes since beginning as editor, but particularly coming to help with the co-hosting and being able to speak to both of you on a regular basis has been always interesting and fun. And all the guests we've had on as well, I think you both brought on a range of guests, as did I, but that everyone always brought on someone interesting that we could.
Who did the most? So you're the one who gets the sparklers, particularly. And
sparklers, that's good.
So, yeah. Welcome to our audience. Please help us out and come up with someone else if you can. And join us in thanking Liam for his wonderful work.
I'll add crowd cheering sound effects to the end.
Yes.
But yeah, it's been a pleasure. And yeah, hopefully it can continue. And who knows, maybe I'll get fired from my job and then I'll be unemployed and have loads of time.
You're always more than welcome to pop back as a co-host, whatever you want.
You sure are. And maybe nice. You'll become enormously wealthy, win the British lottery, and come back. Who knows?
Maybe starting to do the lottery might be a good thing. Yeah.
That's, you know.
You heard it here, folks. Encouraging gambling. Let's do it. All right. All right. Okay, well, bye-bye. It's been a pleasure. Take care. Take care, pleasure. Both. See you later. Bye.